September the 23rd, 1990. It's one of my favorite times of the day when the sun is shining from the west on this side of the house. It's just beautiful. I'm up in Scott's room. And the weather is just a little chilly. But it is September. September brings the changes that we expect this time of the fall. Glory be to the Father, and to the Son, and to the Holy Spirit, as it was in the beginning, now is, and forever shall be, world without end. Amen. I always say that prayer in my between my decades of the rosary, which I've been in the habit of saying every day. And believe me, it doesn't hurt a bit. My sweet blessed mother, she hears me. And I do so enjoy Mass once a week. Sometimes I'll go more often, but always on Sunday or Saturday evening. And it's so pleasant. The words, the divine words. I found out last week that there are 4 million messages in the Bible. Isn't that fascinating? 4 million messages. Yes, I like that. I was talking about Aunt Carrie and her family. Aunt Carrie had a daughter named Helen. She married a man named Joe Loeffler. I didn't know his last name in the previous tape, but Joe is an awful nice fella. She had 2 boys. One was named Edward, and the other, I believe, was Jamie, and they lived in New York. This is out at Massapequa. And Helen was in the WAX during the 40s when the war broke out. She joined up. That was the Women's Army Corps. And she had a snappy little uniform, and she met Joe while she was in the service. She was a very talkative young lady, kind and warm. And after that, why, they married and settled in New York. Aunt Carrie was the sweetest little aunt. She had this pleasant personality, and in her youth, she went to Chicago to nurse's training, and I guess she evidently didn't like it. The work was too hard, or perhaps she just didn't want like the sight of blood, but she came home soon afterwards, and she married Uncle Joe Nebrowski. And then his sister Blanche married Aunt Carrie's brother, my Uncle Walter. Uncle Walter was a real great guy. He was the one that saved us from jumping off that roof at Grandma's. And he raised Walter Jr., Bobby, who was our age. Now, Bobby was more or less of someone we had in common, nothing in common with, because he was our age. And then there was Daniel. And there was Mary Jane. Now, Mary Jane, she belonged to the Marines in those days after Pearl Harbor. She joined the Marines, and she also had a very charming uniform, and she met a fella. His name was Ellsworth Fowler, and his nickname, of course, was El. And they also moved up to New York. I'm not familiar with the place it was, but it was a very small place. And then he was a caretaker for the horses, for the people who owned, I believe it was the Kraft people who owned Kraft cheese. He had worked for them for years, and later on in life he lost his leg due to diabetes. Then there was Rita. Rita's a very handsome young lady, tall, quite tall. Tall like Grandpa Waginka was. He was tall and stately looking, and a sweet old fella. Now, also, there was Danny. I forgot to mention Danny. Danny was in the Waginka family, Uncle Walt's boy. I believe he's settled up there in Michigan someplace now. But the war changed a lot of things for us. We all went out to work at Bendix or other factories where there was war production going on, and now we were in the office, Loretta and I, because we had no previous training and we didn't know if we could stand it with some of the toughs they had in working out in the plant. But I did some very close posting work, which meant I squeezed little numbers in little boxes and some typing, which I had learned in high school. Loretta did the same thing. In high school, she was brave enough to take up bookkeeping, but I don't believe she liked it very well. She bookkeeping shorthand. Our shorthand was rather difficult, so after a while she dropped that, so we kind of hung in there with typing. And, when we were about 15, we moved over to Hoos Court. That's H-O-O-S-E. It was a great place. We lived in a duplex, and my dad worked at Kroger's, which was downtown, where the old Avon Theater is now, next to the that place called Cornucopia. And mother used to go there almost every day to get fresh meat for supper. And my brother Paul, he was just a baby. This was 1937 when he was born. And she would ask our neighbor, who ironically enough was called Tennessee Marty Hall. She was a sweetheart. She would watch Polly, and the way she'd get the seam is when she worked down in her basement, there was a door connecting to our basement, and so she'd just go in that door and go up the stairs and check him out and see if he was taking his nap okay. And then she'd go back. Well, we used to go to Tens a lot. She used to bake these great, wonderful cakes, and we'd help her clean house sometime, and we'd just sit around and generally listen to her philosophy. She had some great stories of the Appalachian Mountains and Tennessee, and some friends that she used to tell us about, and had this very thick southern accent and a gold tooth right in front of her mouth, and I always thought that was very attractive, that bone tooth. And we were quite impressionable, so we listened to her stories. She was about 55 years old and was going with a young man, 31. His name was Arthur, but he was soon drafted, as were most of the men in those days. And he was drafted in the early 40s, and the thing is, he married some young woman while he was there, and Tennessee was awfully mad. She thought he was in love with her. Well, that's another story. After Aunt Carrie, who was my mother's only sister, came young Vincent. He was a sweetheart. Blonde and blue-eyed, just like my grandma, Reginka. And this boy, he's had such a wonderful personality. Everybody liked him. Well, he got himself a job over at Studebaker's, and he worked in the plant somewhere and had gotten something in his eye and eventually lost his eye. It was so sad. My grandmother didn't know what to do. She was told by friends or neighbors, I guess, to go to Chicago and get a real good lawyer and sue Studebaker's and get a lot of money, because Uncle Vincent was permanently injured. Well, she did that, and when she came back, soon afterwards, Uncle Vincent walked off one day and he just disappeared. He never did come back. I know my grandma must have gone through the torments of hell because of that happening. She must have been terribly, terribly upset. In fact, the whole family must have gone through quite a grieving period. Now, there's a nun in Livonia, Michigan, one of the Felician sisters, who was a cousin of my mother's and Uncle Vincent's, and she says, no, he didn't go away and stay. through his own will, somebody must have taken and kidnapped him and possibly killed him. And it might have been the people from Studebaker's. Who really knows? But as far as the story goes, he was never heard from again. And that's so sad. I know my grandma must have grieved dreadfully to lose a boy so young in his life, and with having not lived at all. Going back to Aunt Carrie, she had a boy named Eddie. He was also close to our age, and there again we had some fun in common. He was one of the boys that he and Baba used to come and switch our legs on Dingus Day, which was a Polish custom, meaning Easter Monday. This custom started in Poland, and the reason the girls' legs were switched is because it was driving the devil out, they say, and the celebrating of Christianity that started in Poland 2,000 years ago. And on Tuesday was the opportunity for us to get after the boys, but of course, there again, we couldn't catch them. They were too wily. Well, Cousin Eddie, he went off to war also in the 40s. Those Japs sure did make a lot of trouble, and they hurt a lot of people. Well, the Germans were in there too, of course, doing their dirty deeds. When Eddie was transferred to Thailand, Aunt Carrie didn't hear from him too much, and then one day, the telegram came. It was so sad. Eddie had been killed in action. He had been an instructor right in the middle of a Japanese area there, training guerrillas to fight against and kill the Japs. Well, apparently they somehow got wind of him and this young lieutenant that Eddie was assigned to. They were both caught and killed. And I hate to think what they must have gone through before they died. The Japanese were the most treacherous, the most evil, the most heinous, the most insufferable type of samurai soldiers that you'd ever want to meet in a lifetime. They were cruel, unfeeling. They were loud and had raucous voices, and they were just simply militaristic. Well, after the war, Aunt Carrie had a boy named Leo, and he was quite smart. When he got out of high school, he went into photography. And the Tribune, the South Bend Tribune, had hired him. He did a lot of local work, and then one day he decided he'd go to California. Well, he worked for a newspaper there, and one day, though, he had backed up. It seemed on a hill, and he was doing some photography, and he fell backwards, and he'd hurt his back. So I guess for years after that, as he retired, went into retirement work, years he had trouble with his back. And in the meantime, then his brother, who was John, he lives in South Bend here, John Leprowski, and he married Cindy. And then there was Ollie, he married Joanne. We called him Ollie, but his name was Alex. And then there was Mary Lou, and she married a young man named Krempitz, Kenneth Krempitz. And also Aunt Carrie and Uncle Joe lived on Studebaker Street. The house is down now, but then right next to her lived Aunt Blanche and her family. And Aunt Carrie and my mama, Sophie, were the youngest. Then my grandmother had Uncle Sally. I think he was probably the firstborn here in South Bend. And then there was, I mentioned Uncle Walter and Ladislaus, who we'll call Uncle Burley. He got the nickname from someone I'll never know, but Uncle Burley never married. He seemed to spend his young life just going around visiting the different nieces and nephews. Mostly he'd go to see Loretta. She married Louis Catalano, and he'd go and see her kids. They just loved having him come around. He lived and worked for the Grand Trunk, and he'd have this pass. So he did a lot of traveling in his day, Uncle Burley. And he had moved into the old Oliver Hotel. They had suites there for young single people, or anybody actually who wanted to live there. And we knew he had heart failure. One day he came up to my husband's office, and his ankle was just so swollen. He was wearing boots, and here it was in the springtime. These big, wide boots, because he couldn't get his shoes into, couldn't get his feet into a pair of shoes. So he came up there at the Sherman Building, and Walter called me right away and said, "You better come down. Your uncle's here, and he has heart failure." So I went down to the office, and we called the heart specialist that was in there at the time, and he put him on a strict regimen, put him in the hospital, and kept him there for a few days. Later on, though, Uncle Burley, after he put his traveling, he decided to get a little more rest. Why, he was found dead there then, years later, and I always regretted that I didn't get to see much of him, because he was the one that was always treating us when we lived at Grandma's house. He'd come down that alley on payday, and we just knew when payday was, so we'd run down to meet him, and he says, "All right, girls, we're going out to get a treat." So we'd turn around and go back to Western Avenue and go to the drugstore. Well, you could just find all kinds of goodies in the drugstore, so it was this and that, candy and gum and sodas and so forth, and cookies and good things like that. And one time, he bought us a bicycle. He was so generous. He bought a girl's bicycle for me and Loretta. And oh, we just enjoyed that summer and the next summer so much. Took turns on that beautiful bicycle. Sometimes we'd ride too. One would be hitting the pedals and the other would be sitting down and going along for a joyride. We used to take that bike and go to Grandma's house in Hoos Court and do her a little bit of tidying up, a little bit of light housekeeping, you might say. She'd slip us a few nickels or 15, 20 cents, and then in the afternoon, supposing this was a Saturday, we'd head over to the White Eagle. Oh, that was the best cinema in town. And it was there that we got acquainted with all the old movie actors, Tom Mix and William Hart, and the old movie called Perils of Pauline. I'm not even sure that was a talkie yet. Well, actually, the talkies came out with Al Jolson when he got a start in the movie business, and he blackened his face, and he sang this world-famous song called "Mammy, Mammy, Mammy. Oh, the east sun shines east, the sun shines west, but I like where it sun shines best, oh, Mammy." Oh, it was a hit show. And we'd sit there all afternoon and watch these movies. If we saw them once, it wasn't enough. We'd have to sit and watch two or three times. In the meantime, my mother would send my dad down the alley, and he'd come into the show looking for us, or Mom would do it if Dad was away, and that was the way we got acquainted with our movie heroes and our favorite actors and actresses. At that time, Tyrone Power wasn't in pictures yet, but he came in the late 30s and the early 40s. Tyrone Power, Linda Darnell, Robert Taylor, Eleanor Parker. Oh, these are people that really, really changed the course of our lives, I'll tell you. We all wanted to be movie stars, but of course, that was just a dream. Our grandma and grandpa, in later years, Grandma and Grandpa separated. They were having some problems, not getting along. And Grandpa went to live with Aunt Carrie. Grandma came to live with us. We loved her so dearly. And at that time, we were just getting out of high school. Loretta and I had gone to a wedding. It was in Elgin, Illinois, to a cousin of my dad's named Bernice Benstein. And her daughter Florence was getting married. At that time, a cousin Leonard, who was on my dad's side of the family, and I'll get to them in a minute, he came along with us. And Loretta and I were staying at the bride's mother's house, and we were having a great time. I remember that night, the first time I'd had German potato salad, and I thought it was so delicious. Bernice was a sweetheart. She really cared for my dad's side of the family. She'd always run to South Bend as often as she could to be with us all because she thought to the world of my dad and his sisters. Well, her mother was the sister of my grandma, Salomea Bartizak, on my dad's side. Well, anyway, to get back to the wedding, what happened was, about 5 o'clock in the morning, we were all asleep, but suddenly I woke up and had these terrible pains on the right side of my abdomen. And I thought, oh no, it just can't be anything serious, hopefully. Pain didn't go away. In fact, I was writhing in pain, and I called Bernice, and she came, and she says, well, I'll get the doctor here right away. And my goodness, the whole house was waking up, and I'm sure the bride was in the tizzy. This was her day. And so I waited till the doctor came. He gave me a shot after he said that I'd had an appendicitis attack. And he says, we have to take her to the hospital right away. So I got into an ambulance, and I went one way, and the bride went the other way to the church, and that's the way that day went. They got married and had a good time, and I had my appendix removed. Well, it was just a little slit in the side, which didn't seem to amount to much. But the next day, I had this raging fever. The doctor says, there just got to be something wrong. I'm going to go in there again and find out what. So the following day again, up into surgery. Well, by that time, I had lost a lot of blood. They opened it up, and from what they said, there was nothing wrong. And it was just a shame they had to put me through all that. But after that, the doctor gave orders that after my hospital stay, which was about a week, I was not to leave the city. I was to stay there a month and not travel. Well, that just broke my heart. I wanted to go home. The whole family was going home, and I'd needed some blood transfusion. I had nobody in my family that they had my blood type. So I had wondered what they were going to do, and they finally announced on the PA system that someone was needed to give blood, and would the person with my type please come forward? And as it happened, a little old man had just retired from the railroad. He had my blood type. He says he'd be glad to give. So he did. He saved my life, and I was so happy. But then I did go to Bernice's house, and of course the honeymoon couple went on theirs, and the guests all went home but me. So I stayed with her a month, and she waited on me hand and foot till I recuperated. But in the meantime, my grandma, she died. And it just hurt my feelings so bad when I came home and found out. I didn't know what to do. They had taken a picture of her in her coffin and to show me, and she just looked so sweet, so peaceful. Well, I cried for a month, I think, because I really cared for Grandma. She always took care of good, excellent, kind care of Loretta and me. Whenever Mom wasn't able to get two outfits alike, why, Grandma would always pitch in for the second one. I can remember having this tuxedo coat. It was so gorgeous. It was red, and it had red, black fox fur running down the front and around the back of the neck. And, well, we couldn't get another red one, so we settled for the next for the same style but a different color, which was kind of a forest green, and it had also the black fox fur. And we thought we were just the sharpest things in those coats. You see, they had no buttons, but you put your hands in your pockets, just hold the front closed, and they were just gorgeous things. Well, now, I've never mentioned anything about my dad's family. My dad was named Sigmund, Sidney, or Ziggy, for short, Bartoszek. His father had had a grocery store on Chapin Street years before we were born, and at this grocery store,